If you want to open your Bibles to James chapter 4, James the 4th chapter, look at a verse there, and then we're going to jump to our, Lord willing, our main text tonight that we're going to cover. It's good to see, here tonight. I'm not going to begin to even try to speak about a lot of the visitors who are here, because if I start down that road, I won't get to the sermon. So I'm just going to say to them, thank you. You know how I feel about you. It's, I hope, been evident through the years. And especially appreciate you encouraging me tonight, because you've listened to me for a long time and for many years, some of you, and some of you longer than others. So I appreciate you being here. And I really, everybody, but as we've already said, let's put our focus on the Lord, on His word, His will for us. And we said it yesterday, it's only power for me if I take what He says and put it to practice in my day-to-day life. That's when the gospel affects me, when I live it. So God help us to always take something from tonight that we can go out of here and really put to practice in how we treat others, how we live, how we behave, everything we do. Let's make sure we're doing that. And always, one more reminder. Yesterday, the one thing I wanted you to leave with, I hope, for our people who were here yesterday, is keep striving to be conformed to the image of Christ. And then keep striving to help Christ be conformed in the lives of others. And that's what we want to keep doing tonight as we think about this. In James chapter 4, in verse 8, the first part of that verse, there's a command followed by a promise. He says, James says, draw near to God. And then the most beautiful part of that verse, and He will draw near to you. That's the promise. We draw near to God in our lives, He's promising that I'm going to draw near to you. What's really amazing and beautiful about that verse should define and be defined in my life as a Christian and yours. And what I mean by that is our whole life as Christians, we are constantly living to close the gap between us and God. Every day, every step, every thought, every intent, every purpose, I'm trying to just constantly draw near to Him, just always moving closer to God in everything I do. And at the same time, that gap, God's closing, because then He's doing the same thing. He's drawing near to me as I draw near to Him. So that's what our whole life is about, is just closing that gap in one day. There's no more gap. And that's what we long for. And what's what we long for everybody in this life is to be with God eternally. So I want to shift our focus. Now, when you keep that in your mind, keep that verse in your mind. And tonight we're going to talk about specifically the parable of the loving, merciful Father. Do you know where that parable is in the Bible? The parable of the loving, merciful Father. I'm sure by now you're turning to Luke 15, I hope, because that's where I'm going and that's where we're going to stay the rest of the night, is in Luke chapter 15. We have that string of parables in Luke 15, the lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost son, and we often refer to the latter part is, you know, the prodigal son, the parable of the prodigal son and the wasteful son. And I don't think that's an accurate way to define that text, because He's not the central focus of that text. God is. It's not the prodigal son. It's God. It's the Father in the story that's the central focus of what's happening. So we're going to think about that is the parable of the loving, merciful Father and not the prodigal son. I want you to think about the text, and what we're going to try to do is we're going to break it up into three sections and three little points. We're going to try to drive through this. The first part of the parable, what I want you to think about is he's helping us to see the nature and the consequences of sin. So in verse 11 to about verse 16 or so, he's helping us to understand and picture for us sin, but the nature and the consequences of sin. The second part, about verse 19 and 20 or so, what he's going to help us to see there, really 17 through 20, is he's going to help us to see how we are supposed to come back to God. How anyone should really come to God, who is the Father in the parable. And so in 17 to 20, he's going to really help us to see the attitude, the behavior, how I should be or anyone should be coming back to God. And then from about 20 to 24, what we get to see is what I think is the best part of it. And that is we see the Father's response to the Son who comes back. So that's just how we're going to break down these verses. So with that kind of as our backdrop, let's look at the first part of that, the nature and the consequences of sin. So if you want to, read with me starting in verse 11 of chapter 15 of Luke. He said, a man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of my estate that falls to me. So he divided his wealth between them. And not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant or far country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in the country, and he began to be impoverished. And so he went and he hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into the fields to find swine or to feed his swine. And he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. Now we'll stop there as we start looking at this. So we're thinking about this nature, this picture of sin, and the nature and the consequences of sin. And so he starts off with the son that comes to his dad. And he, you know, he tells him, I want my inheritance. And I want what's mine that, you know, that would come from you. And right up front, you see just this very callous, unloving attitude toward his dad. Because typically, you didn't get your inheritance till they die. And so he comes to his dad and he's really treating him like he's already dead. Because he's just with no concern, he just tells the dad, I want my part. And I want you to go ahead and give it to me now. And so, again, just what a hard attitude toward his father. But what's amazing about the dad, he gives it to him. He goes ahead, he lets him have the inheritance. And I think at least in part there's a lesson that can be learned there. And that is, instead of the dad maybe trying to do everything he could to keep the son from leaving and maybe going and maybe lowering his standards within his home or in his house, he doesn't do that. He goes ahead and he gives the boy the money. He lets him go. And so the first thing I want to ask you to think about in the text is, why does the boy want to leave? As we look at the parable, why is it that he wants to leave in the first place? And I think if you look at it, you can see he mentions that far country and that wasteful, riotous, immoral living. And he's looked at that far country, and it is attractive, and it looks good. And he so desperately wants to be there. And all he can think about is how restricted he is in his father's home. He can't go and do what he wants to do. And he's under his eye. And he's under his authority. There's no freedom. There's no liberty. And all he can imagine is that far country. and man, it must look good. It is attractive. It's appealing. It offers excitement. You know, it offers that allure, that exciting allure, and that's exactly what Satan does. It's what he does. He always is good at making the world look attractive, at making the things of the world look fun and pleasuresome and filling and satisfying. And that's what Satan does. He started in the garden, didn't he, with Eve, right away, you know, getting her to see the tree. And she looked at the fruit. She saw the fruit, saw that it was good. And Satan makes that sin in the world look exciting. In Proverbs chapter 1, the father is trying to educate his son and prepare him ahead for future challenges. But he tells him, your friends are going to come and they're going to want you to throw your lot in with them and put your purse with ours and let's go out and catch. And just they make the world and all those trappings look exciting and appealing. And so for that son, he so desperately wants to go because he sees that world is what he really wants. He looks at that world and he says, that's where living is. If I can get there, then I can really start to live and enjoy life as it's really meant to be. And that's exactly how Satan starts the whole process to get us to look at that world, to be enamored by it, and to be attracted to it and to want it. A second question. When did the boy leave? You don't answer out loud. But when did he leave? Now, if you're looking at the text, and you're going, come on, Craig, I read the text too. I saw what verse 13 said. You know, after he got his inheritance, what did he do when he got his inheritance? Do you notice what it said? There's some great things in there with that word, everything is used. He got everything together, but if you noticed at the end, what did he lose? We know when he's in the pig pen, he lost everything. Well, he got everything together. Do you know what's interesting about that? When you get everything together, you know what you're not planning to probably do? You're not coming back. And so you get everything. When we left Brazil to move back to the U.S., what was ours? I got everything. And anything I left, it wasn't mine, I gave it to somebody. Because I knew, or as a family, we probably weren't moving back. And that was hard, but I knew, you know, I kind of knew that. And so I think that son's thinking that too. He just takes it all, but he really, you're a verse late if you're in verse 13. Because verse 12 is when he first left. When he went to his dad and he said, give me my inheritance. He's already up here. He's already gone. Mentally, emotionally, he's there. He's in the far country already. Because what's he been doing? I guarantee you, I know it. The picture is he's just already been thinking about it. He's already been obsessing over it, feasting on it, reliving it in his mind. And when he hits 12, in verse 12, it's too late. He's already gone up here in his heart. So he leaves. And he leaves in kind of steps, doesn't he? He leaves in like stages. So it starts with just feeding his mind with it, just always thinking about it. And that's where all the fun is. And that's where the excitement is in the world and, you know, in the far country, right? And his up here, that's what he's just feasting on. And a lot of the people here have heard me say this. Some of you have. But what the mind dwells on, the body will act upon in time. What the mind dwells on, you will act on it in time. It's exactly why Joseph's brothers in Dothan, when they see the boy coming, here comes the dreamer, let's kill him. How did they get there just like that? Because they hated him. They hated him daily. And they thought about how much they hated him. But every time they saw that coat, they hated him more. And he's crazy enough to wear that coat when he goes to check on them and check them and then finds them in Dothan.
But they got there because they were already there here. They were already thinking about it. So it's not just that Satan's made it attractive. The other problem is our obsession with that. And that's a problem in our time. We are so obsessed with the world and the things of the world, and we just feast and feast and feast on them. What the mind dwells on, the body lacked on. So he left first in his heart and his mind because he was convinced that's where the fun is. And then when he got everything together, he left physically to go out and do all those things that he so desperately wanted to do. And we saw what happened. And what I want you to see again in the text is he's trying to picture sin for us and what sin looks like. You know, so when you go back and you just kind of look at the way he refers to it after he got everything, he squandered it on this, you know, loose or reckless, immoral living. And then the severe famine comes, and they're always going to come. There's always going to be some type of famine. And I'm not talking literally. I'm sure you understand. There's always going to be a season of famine. And so this famine comes. He's squandered everything. The hard times come. He's impoverished. And he's left and reduced, as the text says, to hiring himself out to a citizen to work and to feed his pigs. You have to remember the audience hearing Jesus tell the story are Jews. And to Jews, pigs were unclean. And so the idea of this boy in that pit with the pigs and feeding the pigs and the animals would be, I would say, especially, you know, repulsive to a Jew. But that's where he's ended up. And so what Jesus is saying and what Luke's recording for us, that Jesus said, he's trying to help me to see the nature and the consequences of sin. That it looks exciting. It looks attractive. It looks pleasurable. It looks good. But it ends in a pig pen. Feeding swine. And wishing so desperately you could eat what there is. So that's where sin, all of its ugliness, that's where it takes you. Away from all that was good back in the house with the father to a pig pen. Away from a father who he's about to say, the lowest servant is doing better there than I am as the son. So here's what you have to wonder. If you know the end, if you know where this leads, would you still go? Would you still do it? If you knew it would end in a pig pen, would you still go? And I think that's one of the challenges of this parable for us, to think that through. If you knew as the son it was going to end with nothing, no friends, nobody that cared, in a pig pen, feeding the swine with nothing, would you still do it? So for us, that's the challenge. Because we know where sin leads, and we know its consequences, and we know where it leads. So that's the first part, the nature of the consequences of sin. The second part, now we shift in 17 to the right way to respond, to come back to the Father. And to come back to God. So if we can go back down to the text with me, please. And I want to start in verse 17, and let's read a few verses. It says, "But when he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I'm dying with hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven, and in your sight, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.
make me as one of your hired men. Now pause there. Look at verse 17 one more time. It says, but when he came to his senses. What does that say about what he was before he left? He came to himself. He came to his senses. So what does that imply where he was here in his sense before he left home? He was not himself. He was not thinking right, was he? But now all of a sudden, every bit of that has changed. When did he, what changed him? What is it when we see here, and we didn't really mention it specifically, but what was it that brought him back? What was it that changed him? And that's what we just read. It's that, I don't know who said this, but his realization that the pigs were having it better and doing better than he was. Something of that way of saying it kind of was, you know, kind of an eye-opener for him. But I'll suggest that what changed him is he started thinking about home. And specifically, I would say his father, his father's house. And when he started thinking about his father, it made him start thinking about wanting to go home. We have relationships with each other. They're so important. And we need them because we're relational people. We're built for relationships. But we need to have such a deeper relationship with God. So that, like this, I think is helping me to see. I miss that when I don't have it. And when that one is not right, I feel that. And I know I've got to change it. This is not good. And that's what I think is happening with him. He's finally come to his senses. He's woke up in the pig pen where sin's taken him. And he just really thinks about home and his dad. Home with his father. And that wakes him up, if you want to say. Some translations I think may actually say, you know, but he came to his senses here. And then look at how he responds. He says, you know, I'm dying here with hunger. And then he makes a resolve. I will get up and go to my father's house. And I will say, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. What I like about him and how to respond, he does not minimize what he's done. He does not try to justify what he's done. He does not shift the blame for what he's done. He doesn't blame his father. He doesn't blame the culture. He blames himself. I have sinned. And that's where you see his behaviors changing. Here's a man, a young man that's humbling himself, who's owning his sin, what he did. And not shifting it, blaming it, pointing, it is all his choice. And he just lowers himself to that position of humility. He embraces his sin. And what I like too in this, he doesn't say this, well, I messed up. I made a mistake. I slipped. And I've heard that 1,000 times, if I've heard it once, from young men I've tried to help through the years. You know, you'll get a call or a text, man, I slipped up again. And I said to them sometimes, why don't you use Bible language to say it? Use Bible language. You sinned. You sinned again. And then let's be specific and try to, because I think we try to water it down, you know? Instead of just saying it, because sometimes saying it really stings. I don't like to say it either, you know. Well, I shouldn't have done that. Well, yeah, you sinned. He didn't do that, did he? I have sinned.
He just owned it. He confessed it. He admitted it. He humbled himself. He lowered himself. He didn't blame anybody else. He certainly didn't blame his father. And so there's the attitude, how we come back to God, how anybody comes to God. See your sin. See where it leads to a pig pen. See that it has separated you from your father, and that thought of him is what drives me to want to come back. And then own your sin. Say it, admit it, confess it, humble yourself, and then one more thing you have to do. You do all of that, you make all those choices, but there's still one more thing he has to do. And that's the third part where we look at the Father's response. But before we do, notice one verse I left out here before we get to this next piece. Look at verse 20, the first part of it. It says, so he got up and came to his father. You can stop right there for just a second. He got up, the text says, and he came to his father. That's an important part of it, isn't it? It's not enough just to think this through. I've got to make this right. I've got to go. I've got to make this. At some point, you have to act on that thought and get up and go. And so he does. He makes the resolve. He humbles himself. He determines everything he's going to say. Just take me back as a servant. That's all I'm asking. And then he rises and he goes home. Now, the third part. The Father's response. Before you read it, I know you know it. I wonder how many of you would have done this. I knew it. I told you so. I told you. I knew it happened. I wonder how many fathers would be guilty of that one. Or us. It's all of us. I told you. I knew it was going to happen. He doesn't do that, and you know it. It's the complete opposite. The rest of verse 20. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him, and he felt compassion for him, and he ran, and he embraced him, and he kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his slaves, quickly bring out the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his hand, sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf, kill it, and let us see, celebrate. For this my son of mine was dead, and he came back to life. He was lost, and he has been found. And they began to celebrate. So who do we serve? That's the Father we serve. That's the Father I serve, you serve, and I'm thankful. That's God. And what he is he's a father that when the son said, I want it, I'm leaving, he left, and he let him. They loved him. He didn't go after him. He didn't go to the far country, dragging him home. And see, he knew that's not going to work. He's going to have to come to his own senses. He's going to have to change himself. If it's going to be real, I can't just... He did. But how many days do you think that any of us as father look, wanting, waiting? That's what the Father did. That's God. And when he saw him, do you remember James 4, verse 8? Draw near to me, and I'll draw near to you. The Son was drawing near to his Father. And then the Father took off running and drew near to the Son. And then he grabs him. I wonder what he smelled like. I bet he didn't smell good. I bet his clothes were dirty. He'd been in a pig pen. I don't even know if he had shoes on because they put sandals on his feet. Maybe he had old ones. They took them off. Maybe they had the imagery here. Didn't matter. The father did. It didn't matter how you smelled. He didn't care. Any of our children, anybody we love, that's in the world,
that comes to God, I think all of us would embrace them immediately with no concern. How they smell, how they look, don't care. They're home. They're back. That's God. Embraces him, kisses him. The Son completes the vow of promise. I'm telling him exactly this. He does it. The dad, it's just like, he hears it, but you can imagine, he just immediately, that's his body, do this, do this. And isn't that beautiful? Because that's, again, it's a picture of God. And what's the picture of God in that text? He lives to give. So the dad, given the coat, the sandals, the rings, the celebration, the party, it's just the picture of the dad just give, give, and give, and take him right back to where he was. That's God. He lives to give and to give back. That's the picture of God in the text. He forgives. He embraces. He kisses again as his own. He gives all the things that he needed, that the boy needed. He gives it right there to him and takes him right back into his home. That's why he's the central character in this parable. Not the boy. It's the father. The nature and consequences of sin always ends in a pig pen. Always. Looks good. May even be good for a little while, but it won't fill you up. Solomon promises that. It will never fill you. You'll never be satisfied. You'll never find true joy in life under the sun, because life under the sun was never intended to give you true joy apart from God. He learned that. And then he humbled himself, he confessed his sin, and he went straight back to the one that he knew would take him back. And he did. Right back where he was. So, if you ever think that you've done something, or that would God ever take me back despite maybe I've done this or I did that, or I mean, would he really take me? Yes. And that's what this parable teaches. Yes. He will take you back. If you come on his terms, and you draw near to him the way that he calls for me to draw near, this story says he will take you back. He will forgive you. He will extend his mercy and grace no matter what you've done. But you've got to make the initiative like this boy. I'm going to go home. I'm going to go to my father. And I'm going to confess my sin. I'm going to fall at his feet, hope for mercy and grace. And this story says, God gives it. And as you begin to draw near, this story says, trust me, he's moving to you. John 4. I can't remember. Verse 23, 24. God's seeking those who will worship him in spirit and truth. He's seeking you to worship him this way. That's parable for the loving Father and merciful Father. Draw near to me, and I'll draw near to you. All right, back up to verse 11. One more time. Let's just read it together, and then we'll be done. He said, a man had two sons. The younger said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me. So he divided his wealth between them. And not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now when he'd spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be impoverished. And so he went and he hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country. And he sent him into the fields to feed swine, and he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving anything to him. But when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, and I'm dying with hunger. I will get up and go to my Father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. And so he got up, and he came to his father. While he was still a long way off, the father saw him, and he felt compassion for him, and he ran, and he embraced him, and he kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his slaves, quickly bring out the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his hand, sandals on his feet, bring the fatted calf, kill it, let him eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and has come to life. He was lost and now has been found. And they began to celebrate. Draw near to God, he'll draw near to you. I'll close with this thought. The reason I can draw near to God and the reason you can draw near to God is because we have a perfect high priest who ever lives to save and who ever lives to intercede for his people, Jesus Christ. He was tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. He bore our sins on the cross. He died and he took what I deserve, what should have been my punishment. His stripes, his wounds, I am healed. My iniquity on him. And he can sympathize, he understands, and now he was raised, he's at the right hand, and he lives again to save and intercede for his people. That's why I can draw near to God, because of our perfect high priest who's given us access to God. But as we close, access to God's grace is dependent upon faith. Romans chapter 5, he says, for by faith we come into this grace. That's your part and mine. God reaches down with grace, and by faith we reach up and take hold of his hand. If tonight you want to take hold of the hand of God, please do that now while we stand and while we stand.